All right, welcome all to another edition of Nurse Stories. We're going to change it up a little bit today. It won't be a nurse story. It will be a dentist story. So I'll introduce my guests in a second. But before I do that, I just want to give a shout out to our sponsors, which is Five Square Aesthetics. Five Square Aesthetics, you're out there to help the nurses get into the aesthetic industry by forming their ultimate side hustle. So if you're a nurse and you want to get into it, Five Square Aesthetics will give you everything you need from an education, from getting the education you need to inject, from helping you set up your business, social media support. Heck, they'll even find a medical director for you. So if you've ever been interested in getting into aesthetics, reach out to Five Square. They will help you get you where you want to be. So today's guest is a good friend and family member of mine, Lon McCray, Dr. Lon McCray. Dr. Lon McCray is my uncle. He's 12 years my senior, but we're like brothers. We've been hanging out for 20 plus years, doing all sorts of adventures and stuff like that. My medical practice is actually in his building. He was gracious enough when I decided to form my business to let me occupy a small nook. It's a little bit but bigger than a small nook now. And so we work every day together. It's super fun. But I've been telling him about our Nurse Stories podcast. He's like, well, I've got some good dental stories. And so we're going to talk about dental stories. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
No, well, first of all, he takes up about a third of the entire office. So it's not just a little nook. And you always are looking for more space. So that's tiny. That's fine as well. So he asked me to say or talk about kind of some gross things that has happened in dentistry. There is quite a few. But when you ask that question, the one that came to mind was, so I am a general dentist. So there's different specialties.
Talk about that a little bit. So for the layman.
Okay. Like so
how dentistry works, specialties, that kind of stuff.
So in dentistry, you can do any of the specialties. And the specialties are endodontics, root canals, periodontics, that's working with people's gums, oral surgery, taking teeth out, implants, things like that. There's even pediatric dentistry where if you decide in the dental field that you are going to be a specialist, then that says to the rest of the, to everyone else, that I am going to only work in this one field. So a oral surgeon cannot say, I'm going to go and do a filling. They could do it because they've been trained,
sure.
But actually they can't anymore because they have put themselves into the specialty market.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they can't do it. Mm. So an endodontist, a root canal specialist cannot go and say, I am going to
do orthodontics.
No, I'm not going to, I'm going to do your veneers. He could do it on a family member, but he can't say that I'm going to do this on a regular basis. Okay. As a general dentist, you can say, I'm going to go learn the specialty and then I'm going to incorporate it. And so that's what I love about doing what I do is I want to learn as much as I can. I want to take the specialties and the things that I want to do and then be able to give it to our patients so that they only have one place to go. But I still work with a lot of specialists when there's times that I'm like, okay, yep, this is beyond me. Go to a specialist.
And so, you're held to the same standard as a specialist, right?
Correct. I mean, if you're going to do that work, then, I mean, it's a gray area. They call it, what is the verbiage in the lawsuit verbiage? Standard of care. Mm. Standard of care actually is at everybody thinks it's at the highest level. It's not. It's who's doing the work. And standard of care is at the lowest level.
And that's the same in medicine too.
Being
that, you know, when you pass your boards, all the boards tell you is you are safe enough to practice.
Yeah, so that's true.
You have met the standard of care.
Well, and so it's interesting when you go to dental school, and this is what I say to a lot of dental students that I teach, because I teach a lot. It is they teach you just enough in dental school to not kill someone.
Yeah.
I mean, in medicine they do the same 100%. Thing, and then the real learning is from that point on. Is everything that you're going to learn.
Never ends.
So we had this patient come into the practice and it was an elderly woman and she comes in and I remember her son was willing her into the, and I could tell she was fairly feeble to the point that it would be difficult for her to even get into the dental chair. So I've got these loops with the light and I said, no problem. Let me just do the exam in the chair. And I could tell she was pretty sick. And so she just did not look good. And so I said, go ahead and open. As she opened her mouth, she had so much pus in her upper teeth. It dripped It dripped from all of the teeth. She had like 8 teeth, and it was dripping out of each one of the teeth. Pus was dripping down to the bottom of her. And the stench.
I'm about ready to gag because I know what that smells like.
It was.
I'm about ready to gag.
It was so overpowering. I had to get up, and I was gagging the whole way down the hallway. As I was going, leaving the room, I couldn't stay in the room. It was that bad. It was, that stench was just overwhelming. I had to compose myself. And I got control over myself. I was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And then I realized, okay, this one I can kick to an oral surgeon. And so that was where I was like, I'm so glad I'm not.
I thought you were going to turn him over to your hygienist and go clean
it up. Oh, yeah. No. At this point, it was, okay, here is a prescription for an antibiotic. You need to get to an oral surgeon. This is one I recommend. Gave him the referral slip. And I remember saying, in fact, this is bad enough. I would recommend you take her immediately to the emergency room.
Wow. A lot of pus.
It was.
If you got that much pus, it's everywhere.
Body. Yeah, it's systemic.
They're going septic. Yeah. Any minute.
So I said, listen, here it is. Just because what I didn't want them to do is to go, okay, I know I can't force them to go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna at least give them a prescription for the antibiotic, but I'm gonna say, hey, you need to get her to the emergency room. I made that really, really clear. And
probably needed IV antibiotics.
Well, and luckily, yeah, and I never saw her again. I felt really bad that I couldn't treat her, but boy, that was the thing I hate the most is dentures. I hate dentures. And when a patient comes in and they've got food all underneath their denture and they take it out and then they give it to you, it's stinky. And they almost expect you to hold it without gloves on. But just that part of what I do, okay, that's pretty gross. I'm thinking of all the different stories.
The mouth's a pretty dirty place.
Okay. Yes. When people always ask, okay, I can't believe you work. Or how do you work in the mouth all day, every day? And my normal response is there's much worse orifices to be able to work in.
Well, that, and you can see what you're working on. Most of the medicine, you can't see what you're working on. It involves imaging. And I know you do imaging, but like, let's say you're a GI doc.
Oh, that's true.
You can't see anything. What are you going to do? Look at their poo? Well, that can tell you something. But you don't see what's going on in the stomach. You don't see what's going on in the intestines. You know, you got to scope them and invasive.
Yeah, but a GI doc is looking at poop. They're looking at that stuff.
Of course they are.
And they're looking up the anus and all that. Okay,
colonoscopy.
Yeah, and I'll take my
I would too.
Orifice over any of the other orifices. Now, what we do, though, is surgery all day. Every day.
So it's DDS, Doctor of Dental Surgery.
Right? Yeah, but I'm a DMD, Doctor of Medical Dentistry.
Right.
You know why? You know what the difference is? Mm-hmm. So DDS came out first, Doctor of Dental Surgery. Harvard said, we have to be Latin, just like the rest of medicine. So it's Doctorate Medicinate Dentate.
Oh, brother.
Exactly.
Thanks, Harvard.
I mean, really. Idiots. Like, it really matters. But so DMD just means you're a little better.
Does it?
Well, that's what I'm going to say.
But they're both like 3-4 year programs, right?
Yeah. So Harvard.
I know there's some 3-year programs out there.
No. So there, a lot of the programs are looking to become 3-year programs.
That's good.
And it is good. And I think that that's actually correct. There is quite a few that are changing from the 4-year program to the 3-year program because it's just becoming unbelievably expensive.
Yeah. Talk about that. How much does it cost? Like, how much did it cost you to go through dental school? And then what does it cost today? Because it's been, 30 years since you've been out of dental school?
Okay, thanks. Well, in reality, yeah, 26. So when I went to school, it averaged, let's see, it was about $30,000 a year to go to school.
Okay.
I did everything as cheap as I could. So the average student got out with living expenses. It was about $150,000 in school in debt. I got out with half that. It was $86,000 because I worked all the way through. I didn't have any living expenses. And then I also got different scholarships and I worked for the school.
You must have been
I
rich.
Did everything. Oh, gosh. I didn't have a dollar.
When you say you didn't have living expenses because
I worked
and managed apartment
complexes the whole time through school. My wife saw, she ran a daycare within our, I mean, we worked our tail ends off to be able to get where we were, to be able to get through school. But the average dental student now, it's skewed, because if you really look at it average, if you take out the state schools that say you can't come unless you are in our state, period, and there's a lot of Texas schools, those are much cheaper.
Yeah.
So if you take the average dental student and you take that average, it's about $400,000 a year, $400,000 to be able to graduate from dental school. So it's about $100,000, that's just tuition.
That doesn't include living
expenses. That didn't exclude living expenses.
So if you...
You're going to be $400,000 to $500,000.
$20,000 to $30,000 for food and shelter.
They're going to be about $500,000 in debt by the time they get out.
Ouch.
Now, you got corporate dentistry.
That's a mortgage payment.
Yeah, that's a mortgage
30
payment.
30 years.
And they don't have a home.
Oh my gosh.
So then they get out and then they got it. And then they're going to get a home. They're going to be $1 million in debt. $1 million in debt right from the start. So what do? They are now corporate dentists, because the corporate dental model is competing against the private model.
Talk about that a little bit.
So they're called DSOs. And DSOs are, they are large corporations. The biggest one is Heartland. It has, I don't even know. I'm guessing well over 1,000 dental offices.
Jeez.
They might be.
They're in Idaho. I know that.
Yeah, they're in Idaho. Pacific is another one. There is Aspen is another one. So there's these big, huge corporations. And what they do is they then, let's just take Heartland. Heartland is known for saying, hey, we're going to set you up as the dentist. You're going to work under the corporation. We're going to get all of your supplies are going to be a third cheaper than the private. And so what ends up happening is that they get all of their lab bills, everything is anywhere between a half to a third of what I pay.
Wow.
And so their expenses.
Because they have bulk buying power.
They have, yes. Which has killed the industry in a lot of ways. And so the problem is that you are getting dentists that are, Heartland does a pretty good job of training, but they come out of school, they give you a really good wage, $200,000 a year sometimes.
Wow.
Which is a really good wage. But you are now a corporate junkie. You have to work their hours. You got to be able to produce so much. Mm. You got to do it their way. And so for me, there was no way I was going to do that.
You would not thrive in that environment.
No, I'm going to do it.
Kill somebody.
No, exactly. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to treat my patients.
Do they pay off their student loans?
No.
They don't?
No, I don't think that that's part of it. Might be some that are out there. I don't really understand all of it. But the thing that's the most upsetting is that you have these supply companies. Let's just say Patterson, Henry Schein. Their number one market still is the private dentist. But yet the private dentist, they're charging a third more than what because they can. So
that just pisses you off.
Well, it does. And so what's going to end up happening is somebody's going to figure out that, okay, what we need to do is we only service private dentists. But we're going to sell it to you for the same cost as what these corporate guys, and we will all switch over.
They're just waiting for that company to.
If one of the companies just did that and just said, we won't sell to private equity, we won't sell to corporate. The problem with corporate is that the dentist is not running his team. Mm-mm. Corporate is running the team. So it is not. And you're never going to know exactly who your dentist is going to be potentially. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to change potentially all the time. Anyways, I can go on and on. I'm a big proponent of private dental offices. We follow medicine because it happened in medicine.
Yeah.
I mean, how long ago did that happen? 20 years ago?
You know, when I worked at the hospital, the surgeons that worked at the hospital, there were two independent surgeons in the hospital on my unit.
Of how many?
Dozens. The rest work for the hospital. Why? They get in their minds, and physicians aren't, and medical people typically aren't the best business people.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I'm not that good.
That's a skill you got to learn. It was a really hard skill for me to learn. But they get in and then they get overwhelmed with the day-to-day grind of running a business. And then the corporations come in and say, listen, we'll take care of all that for you. Just come and work. And that's appealing. Hey, we'll pay your malpractice insurance. You don't have to worry about that. You know, but then what are you going to do? You're going to do our hours. You're going to be on call every third weekend, you know, et cetera, et cetera,
but
et cetera.
The appealing part is you'll be with a team. And so they'll say, okay, when you're off, you'll really be off and you won't be able to. But what they don't tell you is that
you're a bitch.
Yeah. And it's going to be, hey, I want to go on vacation. Nope. Nope. No. These are the hours that
they
agreed.
They don't take vacations. The surgeons rarely take vacations. I mean, when I say at that income level, you should be taking 6-8 weeks off every year.
Yeah, they don't get that.
No.
That's the number one thing for me is the freedom to be able to say, I need to take a week off and I need to be able to go. I need to go on a deer hunt and an elk hunt and my team will get mad and
go
guess
on vacation
what?
With wife to Tahiti.
Yes.
You know, oh well.
Yeah, you can't do that when you're working for corporate, because corporate is all about, and it is about the sales, and it's not that's the other thing that really bugs me is it's okay, here's the numbers of what you produce this month. And the way that you're going to get to do more is you got to sell more. You got to sell more treatment. Mm-hmm. And so they'll come in and they're going to teach you how to be able to sell more. I don't want to do that. I wanted what's
right for the patient.
Exactly. Period.
Yeah. Well, I saw that at the hospital too. Like this one surgeon, he was a surgeon. He did clinic 3 weeks and he did surgery 1 week and he did not take call. He was on call for his patients, but he was not tied to doing general call. Because what happens, a patient comes in the emergency room, they need a surgeon. If you're part of the hospital group, there always has to be somebody there unless you take your own patients. And if you're only doing your own patients, you're always on call, but if you structure your time right, you can have 3 weeks off and then you're on call for a week. So they only do surgeries for a week a month.
So if you were going to have a crystal ball and you were going to say, this is what I see medicine is going to be like 10, 20 years from now. Mm. What do you see? Medicine.
Medicine. So what I see in medicine is you have your doers and your thinkers. So what do I mean by that? There are the diagnosticians, think primary care practices, urgent cares, things of that nature, emergency room physicians, things of that nature. And then there's the doers, surgeons, people that cut, people that treat. The thinkers are going to be replaced by AI, 100%.
So how is that going to work? So I'm a patient.
You're going to have some symptoms. If it's non-emergent, you're going to go to the computer. There's going to be a website. And then you're going to put in all your information, and the computer's going to diagnose you.
Okay, could it ever get to a point, John? You think about this.
We're almost there.
What I kind of see is like this little kiosk. I'm gonna go in. I'm gonna put my arm in. It's gonna do my blood. It's gonna pull everything.
100%.
And I'm just gonna go to a kiosk and it's gonna go, okay, this is where you're gonna go to get this fixed.
Yep, that's what's gonna happen.
Oh, and here's your meds.
It's gonna become very unpersonalized. It's gonna be a volume game. It already is a volume game. It's all about churn and burn.
So if you were going into medicine, what were the things that you would not go into?
General primary care.
What about a pharmacist?
Oh, that's going to be replaced.
Gone, right?
They're gone.
So
orthodontics, gone.
Gone.
Right? Yeah. That's your field.
No.
Computers can do all that.
Yeah, no. Ortho is going to be all done by, no, you'll still have orthodontists, but they're going to be radiologists. They're just going to sit in front of a screen and they're going to make sure that the AI is correct.
Radiology's gone.
Radiology.
I mean, computers can read. I mean, literally, you and I have a business together called Breathe Airway. We have AI diagnose most of the stuff on the radiology reports.
Yeah. The AI does all of that, and it's only going to get better and better. Mm-hmm. What are the other things that you see? I mean, think about it. What?
It's going to go socialized at some point. That's the other thing.
Is AI ever going to get to a point where the public is going to trust a robot more than the physician?
Yes. Algorithms are funny. How much do you trust your phone?
Yeah.
You're on your phone all the time. Like, it's gospel. You Google something, the first thing that pops up, you trust that's the answer. I did that today. We had an argument. What's the largest country population size in one time zone? That was the question that popped up. And I'm like, oh, I think it's China. It was China. They have one time zone. The first thing that popped up at Google. Is that the right answer? I don't know. Google says it is. I trust that.
Yeah, that's true.
And you go on. I mean, 95%.
China only has one time zone.
China only has one time zone.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
But you 95% of diagnosing a patient is the questions you ask. And when you go to the doctor, what do? They ask you a ton of questions. What's going on? Tell me when it started. How long has it been going on? What systems are involved? And then they have a hunch of what they think it is, and then they'll do a physical exam to confirm it. Okay. And usually that physical exam is not even really necessary, which is why telehealth works so well. So if you have all the knowledge of medicine into an AI database, and the database knows what questions to ask, and it has an algorithm, if they answer, if you ever go into an emergency room physicians have a book that is an algorithm. And you come in, and if you have certain questions, they can flip pages and say, okay, it's probably this. Hmm. Now, the ones that have been doing it for 20 years don't need that.
They don't need the book anymore because they've
it's
been
all in here.
Yeah.
Right. The computer can have that book. And so the computer can say, okay.
Not only all that book.
Are you peeing all the time? Yes. Okay. Well, now we have diabetes. We have dehydrate. I mean, there's all these things that, you know, we eliminated all this. It might be this. And then it gets to the bottom. Hey, you probably have a diabetes. Let's get some labs drawn.
AI is not only have all of the book. They're going to have all the data of all the patients that have ever come through.
100%.
And they're going to have all that data, and they're going to be able to. And again, they're going to have your blood. They're going to be able to have all of your readings. They're going to have everything. Do you ever see it like that movie Elysium with Matt Damon?
Yeah, where robots are doing surgeries and stuff. Is that what you're talking
about? Well, it's kind of like you get into this like pod,
yeah.
And it pretty
yeah,
much
to
like
a point.
Like
we're not that far away. Like you, the amount of data you can get from blood will tell you, and then we're just getting an infancy of genetic testing.
Do you think it's there for the rich and famous now?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's methylation gene reports you can get. They're not, I mean, poor people can get it. $600, $700. They'll tell you all the compounds you can't methylate, like folic acid being one, you know, COMT being another. But rich people can pay cash for those things. Insurance is going to pay for your methylation gene report, right? So yes, rich will always, those with means will get medicine and everything else in life. It's like we have the constitutional right to an attorney, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the poor person that with the public defender going to get better representation?
Yeah, good point.
Or somebody who is rich? The rich people get off all the time. Why? They can afford $1 million lawyer. It's the same thing with medicine.
Well, it's kind of like that Brian Johnson, who's the he's the tech wizard that sold his company, and then he's gone completely into decreasing his age. And he's 50 years old, and he says he has the telomeres, which are signs of aging of someone in their 20s.
Yeah, so he's elongated his telomeres instead of his telomeres being short.
And then you look at him and it's like, oh my gosh, he does look like he's in his 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's all sorts of stuff you can do. Red light therapy does wonders for you. I mean,
do you know how much he spends every year?
No.
$2 million a year.
There you go.
$2 million a year, all to decrease his age.
Yeah. Well, if you got the money, I'll go eat my McDonald's burger after this interview.
Well, I'm just thinking, right? I mean, I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and I think it was within 15 years, almost all jobs will be obsolete.
No.
Well, just think about, okay.
You'll always have a doer.
Okay. There's going to be things like plumbing, electricians, things like that.
Changing a bed at a hotel room. Are you going to have a robot do that? Maybe.
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 Oh, here's what I will tell you. You just said McDonald's. There will not be another person working at McDonald's.
Yeah, that I can see. That's very assembly line, right?
But the big reason, why will you not have somebody there?
Because of the laws with minimum wage. It'll be cheaper.
Labor
so
costs.
So they'll push those off, and then the mundane jobs. I mean, this happened at the turn of the century.
It'll be nice, because if I get mad at them, I know that nobody's going to spit on my hamburger. That would be good. That's one good part.
I think I've asked you this question before, but for the audience, at the turn of the 19th going into the 20th century, so 1890s to 1900s, what was one of the largest industries? I'm thinking of two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Talking about this?
Yeah. It was the horse industry.
Horse industry. And number two, whaling.
Yeah, that's right. Because well, of the oil.
The oil was there. That was how they got oil at the turn of the century. And what happened with those? I mean, think about the horse industry. You had liveries. You had people bringing food in. You had street cleaners.
Blacksmiths.
You had blacksmiths. You had people breeding horses, people feeding horses, wagons, wheels. I mean, a whole industry on horses gone like that. Did people not have jobs anymore? No, they started working in factories, right? Same thing with whalers. You had this huge industry, fleets killing all these whales, bringing the oil, all that. What happened? Oil wells. That industry died. What happened? People started working in the oil fields. So yes, workers will get displaced, but there will always be something that people need to do.
Okay, but that being said, you have to look at what society has done, and we have made it to where back then everyone had to work.
They don't have to work anymore. Yeah, you're true.
And so now we've made it to where less and less people.
Poverty is comfortable.
So you're the one who told me this statement. What did it was Benjamin Franklin.
Oh yeah.
What was his statement? I use this all the time. What was his statement about poverty?
The only way to get people out of poverty is to make them uncomfortable in their poverty.
Are we going to make them
more comfortable to be in poverty?
More and more.
Yeah. Comfortable. I mean, there'll be universal wages and all that stuff. People get lazy.
Yeah. So
if you don't have to work, you're not going to work. Working sucks.
Yeah. Well, does
it's
it?
Good, it's good for you.
Yeah, but
you're always better off on the other side.
I can't imagine not working though.
Well, of course not, because you don't know any better. But I mean, well, look, here's a perfect example. COVID happened. You and I shut our practices down for 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
It was nice. It got old fast.
It got old.
But you can get used to, I mean, we were all living on the government teat back then. I was getting little unemployment checks, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
But we got very comfortable not working.
For 6 weeks.
And then we had to get back into it.
I did a lot around my farm.
I helped you. Yeah. Put some irrigation pipes up, if I remember correctly. And I remember doing that thinking, I'm going to catch COVID from this guy. Do you remember that? Boy,
yes.
they had us wrapped around their finger, didn't they?
Yeah. And I look back at it. Okay. And I'm just going to say it. I made a huge mistake in my own body. I got vaccinated.
Oh, yeah. That was a... looking back, the data, well, they're suppressing it, but the data's not good.
No.
Just watch Joe Rogan. That's all we have to say. Like, watch his experts come on and talk about all the number needed to treat, number needed to harm.
I never believed in masks, and now you really look at it, and that was just dumb.
It was dumb.
I mean, pretty much everything that they did was completely wrong. I wish I had never gotten vaccinated.
Yeah, I
didn't just do it once. I did it twice.
So did I.
But I will never do it again.
We dodged that bullet.
Yeah, we did.
How many people you know that died from the vaccine?
Actually, quite a few.
Yeah, I know. I counted it once. It was like 9 in my circle. 9 people. Extrapolate that across the country.
Yeah, but we hear people getting COVID now all the time. Yeah. I don't hear people getting the flu all the time anymore.
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't know.
It's a weird thing.
And it's an election year, so... Who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows what's going to happen? But yeah, that's interesting. Tell us another dental story. Something crazy.
Something. Okay. This isn't so much. Okay. I'm gonna stick with gross.
I like gross. Okay. Our audience likes gross too.
Yeah. This is gross. We had a receptionist. She now works at Breathe Airway. Her name is Christy. Mm-hmm. And we had a patient come in. Mm-hmm. This patient was elderly, and she walked down the hall, went into the room, and I didn't think, and I'm up in my office in the second floor, and Christy comes up and says, "We have an emergency." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? An emergency?" And she goes, "We just had a patient poop little milk duds all the way down the hall." They were little milk duds all the way down the hall. And I went, what? And she goes, "It literally they're poop pebbles." And I went, okay, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. And I went, okay, this is my practice. I'm going to go take care of it. Now, the one thing I don't do well with is
stinky things.
And so I went with a broom and a, like a dustpan, and I was going to go clean it up. I went to the first milk dud that is a poop dud, and it's about, I mean, it's like a big milk dud. And I go to clean it up, and I smell it. And as I smell it, I throw it down and I'm gagging, about ready to lose my lunch. I'm gagging all the way up the stairs. I'm about ready to gag thinking about it right now. And I go into my room and I literally kind of have to put a towel over my head. And I'm like, okay, just get control over yourself. Christy, on the other hand, who can't take blood, can't take saliva, she goes, gets our snow shovel. And it was in the middle of the summer. She gets a snow shovel and she cleans up every single poop.
Good for her.
Little poop thing. And then she sterilizes the carpet, not just once, but like three times. She sterilized everything. That was a gross one. Here's another one. This one is...
You forgot the best part. What did Christy earn from that?
Oh, yeah. And so Christy has what we call at the office now poop tenure. And she can never be fired ever because she has poop tenure. And if you do something like that, you get poop tenure, never can be fired. And so, yeah. Love you, Christy. Last story. This one is set a new rule in our office. And so I had just sedated a patient. We were not in the surgery room. We were in a different room. I can't remember. Something had to be fixed in the surgery room. And we had an assistant that was absolutely fantastic. She did everything right. We were working on this patient, had just finished putting an implant in. And again, to get a little gross, I must have had something a little bit too much to eat. And so I am upstairs in my bathroom doing the duty and thinking, okay, everything's good. Everything's great. I got done with the surgery early. I can spend a little more time in here, read a magazine or something. And all of a sudden I hear this frantic knock on my bathroom. It's emergency. We need you right now. And I was like, whatever. So I quickly finish and wash my hands and I rush downstairs. And what I see, it looks like a murder scene in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's blood all over. And I was, what the heck happened? And I was terrified of what I saw. And so the assistant goes, she tried to get up herself. I was cleaning, sterilizing the instruments. I was only gone for 20 seconds and I came back and the patient had fallen and she had tried to get up and she fell into the window well and smacked her head right on the window well. Ooh. And she had blood that was gushing from a head wound, which we know is going to extra bleed. And so I checked her out really good, make sure that there was no injuries. There was no neck injuries or anything. We ended up helping her into a wheelchair. And then for the next hour, I sat there to make sure and move every single hair. I sutured her entire scalp. Made sure and put it all back. And then I told her husband, I said, you need to take her to the emergency room. You got to go make sure that everything is okay. So they went to the emergency room. Emergency room doctor goes, yeah, I couldn't have done any better. This is amazing. Oh, suturing. Yeah.
It's hard to suture in the hair because the hair gets in the way.
Yeah. At the emergency room, he goes, she would have had a huge bald spot if you would have brought her in here because they wouldn't have messed with the hair. They would have just taken it off. Yeah, right. And so for me, I knew that. So I was meticulously trying to make it all work. Anyways, she was okay. But yeah, we now have a new rule in our office that
never leave a patient
alone. Never leave a patient alone.
Yeah. Well, I've got a funny story that you'll remember instantly. I'm sitting in my office, which is right next to your surgery room.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on the phone, cell phone. I don't remember with who. And I hear you say, John, John. And I'm like, oh, is he on? I'm like talking on the phone. I go around the corner and you're in the hallway with the guy's legs up by your chest. His head is through the wall and he's non-responsive. And I'm like, what in the hell just happened? And I'm like, what is going on? And he's like, he fainted. Come to find out, I'll let you tell that part of the story, but come to find out, what were you doing?
So I was working on his wife and this guy had come in and we were at the end of the surgery. Everything was done. And he comes in and he sees his wife and he's like, I'm getting a little lightheaded. And we said, oh, come sit down. And before we could get him to sit down, he completely faints. His head goes in through the drywall. We had a perfect like spot in the drywall where his head completely went through it. And then he fell on the floor. I was lifting his legs to help him be able to get blood to, because I knew he just fainted.
Yeah. And I show up and he's not breathing. Like he has a pulse, but he's not breathing because he's like in shock, right? And so I start smacking his chest and I do a sternal rub and then he, and he's like, I can't remember what he said. It was funny.
It was like, did I just faint?
And we're or something like that. Yeah, and there's your head through the wall. Yeah. And that hole stayed there for like 6 months.
Okay, it wasn't just his head through the wall. There was little pieces of his hair that was tucked through the wall. And the team, just they hated that. And we finally got it fixed.
But that hole was there for a few months.
Yes. Well, you work in medicine. You're going to have things like this happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was injecting a patient. I was doing cheek filler on her. And I didn't tell her. I tell all the patients this, but when you put cheek filler on bone, it makes a noise. If right next to your ear, you're going to hear a crunching, grinding, right?
Hitting the periosteum.
You hit the periosteum, and that's where you're supposed to put it. So that needle hits, it crunches and grinds. She hears it. Her body goes, something's wrong. Eyes roll in the back of the head. She goes pale, faints. And I'm like, okay, she fainted. Yeah, she's not breathing. I mean, she's still not breathing. Check a pulse. Yeah, she's got a pulse. Are we going to breathe? And then you sternal rub, and then you're like, all right, we had a little freak out. And now in the rooms, I have ammonia.
Yeah,
just in case. That'll shock her out of anything, right? But yeah, you never know what's going to happen. A little poke to the head and faint, stop breathing. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's medicine.
Fun. That's fun. Well, we've gone a little bit over time, so I wanted to thank you for coming. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, we'll have you back. We'll talk about some more stories.
Absolutely.
We've got lots of them. It's interesting to hear from other branches of medicine besides just nursing and medicine. So dentistry's in the grind with the rest of us, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks, Lon, for showing up, and thank you all for listening, too. Till next time, take care.